You know, we're going through the Gospel of Matthew, and we're up to chapter 10. We're going to look at chapter 11 as well in this section. I've been calling it the King's Commission, because this is the section of the Gospel where Jesus sends out the 12, kind of on a mini missions trip, and he gives them some instructions. Now, the interesting thing is that when you look at these instructions, they were not just instructions for their mini missions trip, because some of the things he mentions do not happen to them at this point. It'll happen later when they go and share the gospel beyond the book of Acts, but they are relevant to where they're at and the mission that they're going to have, and they have relevance to you and I, because the fact of the matter is here we are 2,000 years later, we're still sharing Jesus, and we're sharing Jesus in a culture that's not necessarily friendly towards Christianity. In fact, the first section of your notes, you're going to notice this. I entitled it Surprised. Because kind of that's where the church is today in North America. We're kind of, to be honest with you, surprised. If you want to write this down, you can also write down caught off guard. You ever been caught off guard by something? That's not a good feeling, is it? When something happens and you weren't ready for it, you were kind of caught off guard, and usually when that happens, I try to be this calm, stoic German physique, but my wife will tell you that when I get caught off guard, I'm no longer calm and stoic. She'll say I'm emotional and irrational, okay? She'll say that. I wouldn't say that, but she would, okay? And, yeah, my kids would too, okay? So they're laughing right now. Yeah, that's Dad. Okay. But to be honest with you, when you look at what's going on around us, really today the church is caught off guard. In fact, that's the first thing I want you to see there. As our culture is rapidly changing, Christianity is losing favor. Have you noticed that? Christianity is losing favor. So, you know, if you're older here, okay, you can remember a time where if you wanted to establish yourself in a community or gain a good reputation, especially if you were in business or some kind of professional field, that you would ultimately become a member of some church so that you could say that, I'm a member of this church. Like, what did that have to do with anything? Really had nothing to do with anything. It just that you got a good reputation because you were a churchgoer. And so a lot of people joined the church back then because of that it was a good thing to do. Well, that's no longer true anymore. If anything, it's almost, can I be honest with you, it's getting to the place now when you tell people you go to church, they're like, what? Why are you doing that? In fact, in some places, it's almost like, really? Are you that small-minded? In fact, that's what they think. You're small-minded. You're ignorant. You're homophobic. You're a bigot. Christianity is being associated with all of those things. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's being associated with all of those things. And as our culture is rapidly changing, Christianity is losing favor. Now, have you noticed that? First of all, just so that everybody understands, would everybody agree the culture is changing? If you don't think it is, I've got a little pin up here that we can stick you to wake you up. Because all you have to do is turn on the news, turn on the TV, turn on the radio, to anything, and you'll see that the culture is what? Changing. And as that happens, because we're caught off guard, Christians tend to what? We tend to react. In fact, that's my second point. Many Christians are surprised that people don't care for what we believe. You know, I can remember a time when I grew up in the South. My dad was in the military, but he being from the South, we somehow, luckily, he considered it lucky, that we primarily got stationed either in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And a good portion of my growing up years was in South Carolina. My dad was from North Carolina. And that's the Bible Belt. And so Christianity is acceptable, and you would tell people, what are you? I would say, I'm a Baptist. I've never been to a Baptist church, hardly. Why would I say that? Because my dad was a Baptist. Didn't know anything about what happened. I just told people I'm a Baptist. And most people down south, well, I'm a Baptist, or I'm this, I'm a Methodist, or I'm Episcopal. And they don't necessarily go to church. They're just everybody. And if you've lived down south, you know what I'm talking about. It's the culture. And you would never hear anybody badmouth church because it wasn't acceptable. Well, they badmouth the preacher, but they wouldn't badmouth church. Now, but here's the thing. Now, it's not acceptable anymore. So oftentimes you'll hear people badmouthing, not necessarily a particular church, but church in general. Because they don't care for what you believe. Have you noticed that? It's playing out in the news all the time. It's almost like what you believe is almost anti-societal. And that's catching us off guard. In fact, remember I told you that, you know, I try to have this calm, cool demeanor, but then when things catch me off guard, my wife and kids tell me I become emotional and irrational. I don't think that, but they think I do. In some ways, can I be honest with you, Christians are acting like George because we're caught off guard. And it's playing out on Facebook. It's playing out on the Christian radio. It's playing out in messages. It's playing out everywhere that we are surprised because people don't care for what we believe. It's, you know, here's the problem. Somehow, can I be honest with you? I don't understand how. Somehow, we have come to this conclusion that everybody likes what we believe and believes what we believe. Somehow we came to that conclusion, but that's never been true. You know, we have a member in our church who's a shut-in, and I can remember years ago, Louise, she's been in our church since 1950. And I remember talking to Louise one time when I visited her, and I said, Louise, tell me what it was like in the 50s. Were there lots of Christians in Kerwinsville? And she said, no. It was about the same number of people who didn't believe and about the same number of people who went to church. Nothing's changed. But you hear about how great things were in the 50s. But most people back then didn't believe, just like most people don't believe what? Now. It's just that now, the church is no longer acceptable. Why are we surprised? Now, let me just stop to you for a moment because I want you to grasp this one point. In fact, you can write it down this way. We may be surprised, but God isn't. You want to write that down? We may be surprised. In fact, if you want to, you can remove the word surprised and put the word shocked. We may be shocked at what's going on, at the reaction to the church, and the way people think about Christianity and their response to it, but God's not. In fact, we're going to see from this passage today that God, listen to me, Jesus, from the very beginning, before the church was even established, as he was calling his initial disciples and giving them a commission, already knew what it was going to be like to be a believer in this world. And folks, 2,000 years later, nothing has changed. Nothing. So what we're going to do is we're going to see that you and I need to have a realistic outlook. A realistic outlook. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, sometimes we can have, you ever told somebody, oh, you just have your heads in the clouds, you're not seeing things, you've got rose-colored glasses on. Have you noticed that? We tell people that. Take the rose-colored glasses out, get your head out of the clouds, and look at the reality around you. But let's look at it from the way Jesus says it. Look with me, we're going to look at verse 16 through 23. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in the synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end will be saved. For when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly, I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Here's what we're going to do, folks. We're going to see six things. Six things that Jesus says in this, can I be honest with you, rather gloomy passage. Wouldn't you say that? You say, wow, George, that's a pretty heavy statement Jesus is talking about. Well, folks, when you look at this, this is not just instructions to them, it's instructions to us. And so we're going to see how you and I can have a realistic outlook from these six things. So let's notice the first one. The first one. Jesus sends his followers into a harsh world. Jesus sends his followers into a harsh world. Look with me at verse 16, very first part there. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Whoa. Did you notice that? He didn't say, behold, I send you out like Christian warriors. In fact, of all the animals to choose from to describe us, he describes us as what? Sheep. Now, have you ever been around sheep? Have you noticed they're pretty good at defending themselves? Have you noticed that? That they can handle anything that comes by? No, they can't. Do you know what I'm saying? No. I mean, in fact, he's sending out as like sheep in the midst of wolves. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Do you know what I'm saying? You're going to be devoured. The world is harsh. See, this is the point. He starts off with a very realistic outlook. And see, here's the thing. Don't be lulled by the way things used to be. You need to understand how they really are. If you trust Jesus Christ as your Savior, you are a sheep in the midst of a harsh world of wolves. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're a sheep in the midst of a harsh world of wolves. That's what the reality is. He sends his followers out into a harsh world. So don't sit there and say, why is this happening? Why aren't people liking what I'm saying? Have you noticed that? I mean, we get so blown away when somebody says, I don't really care for what you're saying. I don't believe that. You're crazy for believing that. And we act like something's wrong. There must be something wrong with me. No, nothing's wrong with you. Jesus told you it's going to be like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? People aren't going to accept your Jesus. People aren't going to accept your Christ. We need to get a grip on that. In fact, here's what he tells us to do. Look at the second thing, and I think this is so important. This requires that we be discerning and pure. Because we live in a harsh world, where people don't care about what you believe. You need to be discerning. He says it this way. Look with me, verse 16. Therefore, he says, verse 16, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. What's he saying here? Number one, be wise as serpents. What's he talking about there? He's talking about discernment. So look, you ever tell somebody when they're in the midst of a crisis and they act like George does, what are you going to do? What is the first thing that comes out of your mouth if you're trying to help them? Calm down. Bruce said it. Get a grip. Think. Because here's what happens. When you react, what takes over? It's not the brain. What takes over? Feelings. Emotions. And you got to have a cool head, right? Isn't that what we say? We got to have a cool head in the midst of the crisis to handle it. See, this is what Jesus is saying here. Jesus is saying, look, I'm sending you out into a harsh world of wolves. You need to calm down and be discerning. You need to have a cool head in the midst of what you're going through. You need to be, listen to me, wise as serpents. So he's calling us to discernment. I think, can I be honest with you? That's what's lacking a lot of what I see today in the media, Christian media. Christian leaders, when they talk about the culture change. And I'll say it again. I just read an article this week. There's a Harvard professor, law professor, who made the statement, the culture war is over. Now, he's not a Christian. He was basically saying, and you lost. And we're like, yeah, we lost. The culture war is over. Now, what does that require? Discernment on our part now. You got to think about things. It's a different world. Before, you could make jokes about homosexuals and nobody cared. Now you got to be careful, don't you? Do you know what I'm saying? Before, you could mock this or, you know, act this way and still be spiritual. Now you got to be careful. Because people are calling you on the carpet. There's a lot of things. I can remember 20 years ago listening to my pastor in this very big church mocking homosexuality, and everybody's laughing. Wouldn't take place today, would it? Because he would be called on the carpet. He would be called a bigot. And to be honest with you, can I be honest with you? I even cringed back then when he did it, and I thought, you know, that was kind of shameful that he did that. Now you're getting called on the carpet. Back then it was acceptable. It's no longer acceptable anymore. That might be good. Here's what's happening. You've got to be discerning. How to function in this world. Don't react from your emotions. Here's the other thing he tells us. Be harmless. The word harmless there, used only 3 times in the New Testament. When you see that word harmless in your text, if you're using the New King James, or the King James, he's saying be harmless. What's going on there? He's talking about purity. And when we talk about purity here, we're not talking about sexual purity. We're talking about how you live your life. In fact, the other time that it's used is in Philippians, Paul's letter to Philippians, chapter 2, verse 15, that you may become blameless and harmless, again, that word pure, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. You notice what he's saying there? You're to be harmless, pure, in a crooded and perverse generation. Wouldn't you describe that as what's going on around us? So that you can be a what? Light. So that you can be a testimony. See, it's calling us not just to be discerning, but to be an example. Let me just stop for a moment. Let's separate ourselves from Christianity for a moment. Let's just talk about life. Okay? You ever met somebody, whenever something happens that is a problem in their life, they're always, they're not thinking, they're always emotion. You know people like that? Every time there's a crisis, okay? What do you think about people like that? Honestly? What do you think? I'm listening.
I'm afraid to speak, George.
What do you think? Weak? Would you trust somebody with a major decision like that? Would you look to them as being the epitome of helping you through your difficulty? I'm going to follow their example. How do you do that arm-waving thing? How do you pitch your voice that way? Did you know what I'm saying? You don't. Why do you think he tells us to be wise as serpents, harmless? Because you're lights. You've got to be discerning in this world. And you've got to live your life in a way, in this crazy world around us, in a way that what? Communicates truth. Communicates truth. Communicates what truth? Jesus. Jesus. Okay, let's go on. We see 2 things. There's 4 more to go. Let's look here. Look with me at verse 17 and 18. But be aware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in the synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake, and as a testimony to them and to Gentiles. Two things I want you to see out of these two verses. Number one, opposition that arises is a part of God's plan. Did I tell you earlier, did I tell you this? We might be surprised, but God isn't. Didn't I say that? Didn't I say we might be shocked, but God isn't? Can I tell you why? Because what's happening is all part of, listen to me, you got to grasp this aspect of the sovereignty of God. He planned it. He knew it was going to happen. It's all part of his plan because everything's moving to one major event. What's the major event that everything's moving to, folks? Jesus coming back. And and when you read the Bible, when Jesus comes back, is the world great? No. The world gets to the point that somebody like the Antichrist can take over. So here's what I want you to see. Look with me in a passage, and I'll point it right out to you in the passage. Verse 18, you will be brought before governors and kings. There's those three words. If you want to, underline them. For my sake. For my sake. It's God's plan. For his purpose. See, the difficulties that are arising around you, the harshness, the people of what you believe, and the things that we're being accused of and everything now in our culture. Listen, they're happening for God's purpose, and how you respond to them, how you respond to them is all part of God's plan. Because why? Because that, my friends, is what's going to communicate the reality of Christianity to people. And how many of you have ever, there's a little book that's not a little book, it's actually a good read though. How many of you have ever heard of a book called The Fox's Book of Martyrs? It was written during the time of Henry VIII, and it's called The Fox's Book of Martyrs. It's really a history up and from the time of the apostles all the way to the time of the Reformation, and it's really a book of stories about the martyrs. How many of you have heard of it? Can you raise your hand? Only a few of you. How many of you have ever read it? I've read it, okay? Some out of the Fox of Book of Martyrs are some amazing stories that come out about, listen to me, about executions where someone will come and they're being executed for their faith, and then the executioner commits his life to Jesus because of how they're responding. And then they get executed. Now listen, hardly anything was said. And that executioner came to faith. How did that happen? Testimony. Testimony. See, it's all part of God's plan. How we respond is all part of God's plan. It's all part of his plan. And you may not know that how you respond may have an effect on somebody, whether or not they'll come to Jesus. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whether or not they'll come to Christ. Something to think about. Here's the second thing I want you to see from these two passages. All part of God's plan. Here's what I want you to see. He tells his followers not to worry about how to answer the opposition. He tells his followers not to worry about how to answer the opposition. Look with me at verse 19 to 20. But when they deliver you up, don't worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour. What you should speak, for it is not what you should speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Here's what I want you to see. Here's the thing. How many of you have ever been in a situation, maybe at work, or maybe at a family gathering, reunion time, or just meeting, talking to your neighbor, and they bring up some kind of crazy question, and you don't know how to answer them? Have you ever been in that kind of situation? It's like, holy cow, what do I say to them? They're antagonistic, and you're worried. Don't worry. Don't worry at all. Let God guide you. Let him tell you what to say. And he will. I think I shared the story. I think it was in Sunday school I shared this story. Maybe it was in church. I don't remember. It was just a couple weeks ago. I shared about pastoring in Canada. We had this couple that were coming to our church. They were kind of living together, and they were coming to our church, and I do what I normally do. Back then, I would go to your house. Now, I just take you to McDonald's, okay? And I went to go visit them, and I said, well, you have any questions? And I had this guy who was a friend of hers who was in our church. He was a trustee, and he was there with me. And I said, do you have any questions I can answer? Maybe you got some questions about church. And she spoke up. She said, I got a question. I said, okay, what's your question? What do you feel about women preachers? And she was pretty, what do you feel about women preachers? And I thought, well, how do I answer that? Because you're almost doomed. You know what I'm saying? You're almost doomed. So I said to her, her name was Sandra, I said, Sandra, that's a pretty good question, but I kind of have the sense that's really not the issue you're having. I don't think it's really about what I believe about women preachers. So what's the question? And immediately she broke down crying and she ran out of the room. So I'm there with my friend and with his friend who lives with her, and we're kind of looking at each other and, okay. And I'm feeling bad. Like, I made this girl cry, you know, which can happen sometimes. You know, and she came back in the room, she wiped away her tears, and she sat down, and first thing out of my mouth is, I'm sorry I offended you. And she said, you don't need to apologize. She said, that's not why I cried, and left the room. I said, well, can you tell me what the issue is? And she said, here's the thing. She said, we've been coming to your church for a couple of months now, every Sunday, and every Sunday I leave, and I want to know, how do I get this Jesus that everybody else has? That's what the real issue is. So you don't need to worry about how to answer the questions. You just need to be responsive to the Spirit, and He can sometimes lead you. Now listen, boy, that was pretty smart that you answered that. No, I had no clue. I'm dumb. I'm not a conversationalist. Do you understand what I'm saying? God will give you the Holy Spirit will guide you concerning what to say. As we're living in this world, don't react. You be smart. Let the Holy Spirit guide you. He will guide you in what needs to be said. Now, let me just stop for a moment. But that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be accepted. What matters is you say what Jesus tells you to say. You hear what I said? You may want to write that down. It doesn't mean it's going to be accepted. What matters is you say what Jesus tells you to say. So here's the other one. Look with me at verse 21 to 23. Final point. He says this. Now, brother will deliver up brother to death and father to his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. Now here's the final part. Here's the thing that Jesus is saying. Endure to the end as we understand that we will suffer as a Christian. Endure to the end because we understand. We understand that we will suffer as a Christian. Do you understand? You need to grasp that point. You will suffer for your faith. You need to write that down. Put big underlines, exclamation points. You will suffer for your faith. Why do you say that, George? Because not everybody accepts what you believe. Bottom line. 1986. 1985, actually. April of 1985, I became a believer in Jesus Christ. Now, I want you to understand, my home background, we did not go to church. I told you I identified as a Baptist. Well, I don't even know why I said that, because we did not go to church. My dad was a Baptist. I could have said I'm a Lutheran, because my mom was a Lutheran. But we didn't go to church. And I remember when I got saved, and Jesus Christ came into my life, and my whole view and perspective totally changed. I remember I would come home, and I lived at home because I commuted to the University of South Carolina. My brother was there in his finishing up his senior year in high school, my sister, my mom, my dad, and I would be sharing my faith with him. They thought, listen to me, literally, that I had gone crazy, that I had gone nuts. My dad thought that I had joined a cult. I said, no, Daddy, I'm going to a Baptist church. Sounds like a cult. It happens. And sometimes even from your family. And some of you, you're wondering, am I saying the right things to my family because they don't accept? No, folks. Jesus said that would happen. He told you it would happen. But you endure. You hang on. As you understand, because you're a follower of Jesus, you will suffer. Do you understand what I'm saying? See, this is the thing that we need to understand as a church today in North America. Culture is changing. It's no longer acceptable to believe what you believe. But here's the thing. Didn't Jesus tell you it was going to be that way? So you just endure because you're going to suffer. So you say, okay, George, what do we do with this? How do we apply this to our lives? Well, here it is. How are you reacting to the sudden animosity towards your faith? How are you reacting? You see, there's three responses. Do you realize that? There's three responses towards animosity towards your faith. The first response is reaction. You fight back. And let me just stop for a moment. You've got to separate your American values from your Christian values. Your American values you hit me, I hit you back. That's an American value. That's not a Christian value. Jesus says, somebody hits you, you turn the other cheek and let them hit it too. They're not the same. So the first reaction that sometimes will happen is you react and you respond back. The second one is that you compromise. You change who you are to fit who you're with. And that happens. You water it down in your own life. But see, the third reaction is the one that we need to have. You just endure. You know, you're wise. You're not reacting. You be pure in your lifestyle, but you hang on. So my question to you is, how are you reacting to the animosity towards your faith? And folks, it will come out. People will be not happy about what you believe. You need to realize that. Here's the second thing. Are you responding out of fear? Yeah, and I understand that we're fearful. It's like, who would have ever thought that you turn on the news and the only thing they're talking about is bathrooms? But that's the world we live in today. Doesn't make any sense, but that's the world we live in. And common sense doesn't mean anything anymore, does it? And it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with common sense, right? So how do you live in that? And I can tell you what happens. Sometimes the reaction happens because we're caught off guard. And the biggest reason we're caught off guard is because we're what? Afraid. What's life going to be like now? Are you responding out of fear? So what do we do about this, George? Well, here's what I want you to pray. Here's what we need to pray. We need to ask the Spirit to help you to endure the increasing opposition to your faith. To help us endure the increasing opposition to the faith. You need to ask the Spirit to help you to endure the increasing opposition to your faith. It's going to happen, folks. If you think things are the way they are right now, what do you think they're going to be like 10 years from now? And I want you to hear me. At no time in any culture of the world do they ever go back. You never go back to the way things used to be. At no time does it ever go back. We're going to try. No, never. Do you understand? It's a principle. What do you mean? Let me ask you a question. Remember, I'll bring in another message here. And I'll close with this. How many, have you ever heard me say that when you enter into a sin, you open up a new reality to your life? You ever heard me say that? Did you open up a new reality? So like, for instance, if you've never drank alcohol and you don't know what that's like, once you drink alcohol, and especially if you find yourself addicted to it, you become what? There's no going back. You can't go back to what? The way it was before you didn't try alcohol, or if you do drugs. You can't go back. Why? Because now you've opened yourself up to a what? New reality. That's a human principle, folks. There's no going back. And for our culture, we've opened ourselves up, let's go ahead and say it, to a new reality. And we could talk about going back. In fact, that's what we do. You ever heard of drunk? Oh, I wish I'd never taken a drink. You ever heard of somebody? I grew up with an alcoholic. I wish I had never taken a drink. Well, there's no going back. You can wish all you want, but there's no going back. So what do? You ask the Spirit to help you to endure. To endure the increasing opposition to your faith. That's what we need to do. Let's pray.